Paul. Thanks, Sally.
Thank you, Sally. I'll talk real fast. Like those to my right, I am speaking in my personal capacity, and I don't want to spend my 5 minutes talking about what I agree with about many of my other panelists, but there is a lot I agree with, just a few, including the need for multiple disciplines and regulatory policy making, the need to consider non-quantifiable costs and benefits, distributional effects, equity. And I think I'd agree with Sally that OIRIS staff are some of the finest examples of public servants you can find in our government. But I'll stop with those points of agreement and just lead to my basic message, which is, in my personal opinion, presidential review of agency rulemaking informed by benefit cost analysis is more important now than it's ever been. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but as the Administrative Conference of the United States, I think, put it well, is that the scope and complexity of regulation and our many competing national goals make it a central task of modern government to choose wisely among competing priorities. And here we are in a situation where our economy is in collapse, and the president is devoted to and has been elected on a platform that is the most ambitious regulatory program any president's ever had, including addressing the problem of global climate change. But there's many other enormous goals and ambitions that will be addressed through regulation, including renewable energy, healthcare, education, and others. I think Sally put it best in her first report to Congress on the costs and benefits of regulation when she said, "Regulations have enormous potential for both good and harm. But the only way we know to distinguish between regulations that do good and those that do harm is through a careful assessment of their benefits and costs. And such analysis can be used to redesign harmful regulations and to redesign even good regulations so they produce more good." And in my opinion, it's unfortunate that right when this country is considering the possibility of radically weakening regulatory oversight, the rest of the world is moving towards ways to strengthen it, to improve their economies and their competitiveness. And this doesn't bode well for this country if we go down that path. And I could name you many examples of countries that are looking to us and have been talking to our government about this, including the UK, the European Union, Canada, Sweden, the Netherlands, Ireland, Australia, Vietnam, Indonesia, South Africa, even Russia, Brazil, and China. As to the importance of benefit-cost analysis, I agree with everyone here who said it's not perfect, but my point is it's the best tool available we have to understand the trade-offs among various alternatives, to focus on what the problem is, to understand various options for addressing the problem, and to organize in a clear and transparent way what is known and to illuminate what is not known. It is not the sole basis for decisions, but it's a very helpful tool in illuminating the range of possible effects. And as Sally said well, the six most important words in Executive Order 12866, cost-benefit analysis applies only to the extent permitted by law. And the order makes clear that environmental, public health, safety, other advantages are important, equity. And I'm very concerned that other approaches will invariably lead to policy judgments that are less informed, less transparent, and based on narrower considerations than is able to be done under benefit-cost analysis. I'll make a few points very quickly. One, the literature shows the benefits of cost-benefit analysis. Second, that an awful lot can go wrong, and I've seen this when benefits and costs aren't considered. I'll name a few examples. Corn ethanol mandates, airbags, drinking water, and cryptosporidium, asbestos removal, MTBE. And that benefit-cost analysis can, in many instances, be pro-regulation. And OMB and OIRA can actually be a white knight for EPA and other agencies that are trying to regulate. The classic example in the Reagan administration was lead and gasoline. More recent examples, FDA and addressing trans fat content in food, EPA diesel emissions, whether we're talking about heavy-duty trucks or off-road emissions, Department of Transportation fuel efficiency standards, which the Bush administration was the first in many, many years to tighten, which will save 4 billion gallons of fuel over the lifetime of those vehicles, and addressing pollution from coal-fired power plants. And I think it's fortunate that a recent Supreme Court decision, I think, makes very clear that agencies have a green light to use benefit cost analysis. They're not forced to, but they have flexibility and a green light to use it, even under seemingly very prescriptive statutes. Having said those things, I did want to address a few of the things in the CPR paper that I read, because I do think a number of the arguments in the paper are kind of straw man arguments, and this Spock versus Captain Kirk dynamic is an interesting one. I sort of took the overall message as sort of a spin on Shakespeare, first let's kill all the economists. And as a lawyer, I should probably be heartened that a group of lawyers is kind of saying that about economists, but I would say the need for multiple disciplines in the regulatory process, in my opinion, it militates for more use of economists, scientists, risk assessors, public policy experts, public health experts in the regulatory process than just lawyers. And I'm worried that's sort of the tilt of where this paper wants to go. There's talk about the dysfunctional state of the regulatory agencies, but really, I mean, many of the examples cited and then connected to OIRA review have nothing to do with OIRA review, whether it's CPSC addressing lead in toys, the FDA peanut butter issue, FDA drug reviews, financial regulations. There were no benefit cost analyses done, nor were they subject to OIRA review. One of the exceptions on financial regulations is where OFAO, where OIRA had some authority and issued a prompt letter trying to get tightening of regulation governing Fannie and Freddie, and also pushing HUD to increase the transparency of mortgage closings under RESPA, which were then thwarted by congressional action. This is a couple of examples why I think OIRA should have review of the independent agencies. And I see David at the podium. I guess the final point I'll make is that please don't forget the role of the need for some sort of debate and some sort of checks and balances in our government. And Sally put it well, other parts of OMB look at the budget, they look at legislative proposals, and there's a vigorous debate over some of those proposals. There should be. That doesn't mean OIRA can't be of assistance to agencies. They should be in cases where they think the agencies have a compelling point, and I think OIRA's use of prompt letters in the last administration has set a very good foundation for a kind of cooperative relationship that can, in many cases, be pro-regulation. With that, I'll just say, now more than ever, and I'll end.